create wealth with women for women. That's my purpose.
Hey there, I'm your host, Serena Smith, and welcome to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. Imagine being one of the first 100 employees at Lululemon. You launch 20 retail stores in a single year, and then you think, what's next? Meet Natalie Westlake, an entrepreneur who took a leap of faith and stepped in as VP of Marketing and Operations for Blue Boho, one of Canada's most successful independently owned jewelry brands, known for striking the balance between raw and refined designs.
We're the number one sustainable fine jewelry company in Canada, and I think the thing that we do better than anybody else is explain why.
Natalie was recruited for her ability to build customer loyalty, scale up growth, and expand retail presence.
I'm extremely competitive when it comes to making it as personal and intimate for each person as possible.
Today, we're covering her bold marketing tactics and how to grow from 0 to 5 stores. Natalie, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You were a part of a company that is now like in the category of mythical, Lululemon. You were one of the first 100 employees. Was it already a rocket ship when you joined?
Not yet. No, I think at that time we had about 10 retail stores, so still pretty small, all in Canada. And I actually learned about it at a yoga class. I met somebody there who was head to toe in an outfit. It was a beautiful outfit. I remember she was wearing all green. And I asked her, where is it from? And she told me Lululemon. That's the very first time I had ever heard that name. So it was still pretty small, still pretty scrappy. And I learned about it organically through somebody wearing the product in a class. So it was kind of a cool time to learn about Lululemon.
And I feel like that still to some degree informs some of your marketing tactics today.
Definitely. To keep a brand feeling small and organic and learning about it through a referral, through somebody you admire or respect or somebody whose word means something to you, that always left a very lasting impression on me.
You spent nearly 2 decades at Lululemon before deciding to jump ship. That's a really difficult decision to make, you know? 20 years of anything is a huge chunk of your life and identity. What got you to that decision-making point that it was time to leave?
There was no like specific finish line that I was looking for. It was more a feeling. And I always sort of knew going into Lululemon, we were mentored in store to always think, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's going to hand you a free ticket. If you want something, you have to go for it. You have to work hard for it. And so Lululemon for me, I always, you know, I thought of it as this is a great place to learn. I honestly thought I would be there for months. I did not think I would be there for nearly 2 decades. But I was always sort of in the mind frame, what can I learn? What can I take with me? Who do I need to know? Who could I emulate? Who could mentor me? I always saw it as a place like a university. I was there to learn, take what stuck, and move on.
Knowing when to stay and when to go can be such a difficult decision to make.
It is, yeah. We hit $10 billion. And once we hit $10 billion at Lululemon, things were different. Things felt different. Things felt much more centralized. What was once, you know, an opportunity and a role to have a very wide scope became very singular. And we were looking to get very specific with roles so that you were extraordinarily gifted at one thing. And once we got to that place, I knew I had outgrown it because I was really mentored to be an entrepreneur. If I touched something, I was responsible for it. And I couldn't let that go. You know, I wanted to have my hands and more in the business. So once we sort of hit that milestone, I knew, okay, if I want to keep expanding myself, I'm going to need to move on.
It's interesting that journey of being able to be something more of a generalist and then having to become more of a specialist.
That was really hard for me. I wanted to be in brand innovation. I wanted to do different things with community. I wanted to look at real estate differently. And I had always had that space to do that. And so once we got that big and became very specific about roles, that was time for me to move, to continue to grow and spread my wings. I knew I had to go somewhere else.
Do you have the space to do that at Blue Boho?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a totally different role. We are at a completely different level in our growth, and I get to have my hands in a lot more. And so, you know, that really fills my cup. I want to work in brand innovation. I want to work in community. I want to help retail stores. And most of all, I want to spend time with our guests and our store team.
Right. Yes. This reminds me, when you first joined Blue Boho, though you were coming in an executive capacity, you didn't quite start there, right?
I did not, no. So Maggie and I had known each other for years. We actually met and worked together at Lululemon, the founder of Blue Boho. I had had a very early experience with her, so I kind of knew the seeds of the brand. But I didn't know her guest experience. And so one of the very first things her and I aligned on is I wanted to spend time in the store. I wanted to get as close to the guest as I possibly could. So the first thing I did was become a store manager. I hired a team. I onboarded them. I recruited them. I trained them. I spent time in the store as close to the guest as I possibly could, understanding the intentions behind every collection we make and how we bring it to life in an experience in the retail store.
What was your first big goal and strategic move when you joined Blue Boho?
My first goal was to understand the guest experience better than anybody in the company, which was a pretty big ask because I was brand new and there were people that had been there for years. But I really wanted to fast forward. You know, I was super hungry and very curious to know. I hosted one of the first ever Tupperware parties. That had been 15 years prior. So I wanted to get as close as I could to how has it evolved? What does it look like now? What are the touch points that every guest will receive, whether they're online, whether it's in person? So one of the very first things I did was spend a year as a store manager at our Queen Street location. It's our flagship location. So I had the luxury of understanding our engagement ring, which we call Beloved. So all wedding bands and engagement rings, we carry all of them at that store. I wanted to know what that experience looked like. She was driving him in. Well, what was the difference between talking to him versus talking to her? And what did our core product look like? What was that experience like? So I spent a good year in the store just asking as many questions as I possibly could and getting as close to the guest experience as I could.
Were there things you learned that surprised you?
Absolutely. In terms of Beloved engagement rings, she is looking for an aesthetic. She wants something beautiful, something that she connects with. He wants to know the specs. Why is it this much money? Tell me about the construction of this ring.
Give me those four C's.
Yeah. So two totally different reasons why you are looking at a ring and you like a ring. And I needed to adjust from talking about four-way stretch and running to, wow, this is an emotional major milestone in your life. You're about to propose to somebody and you want to feel taken care of, but you want quick, easy answers so that you can make a decisive decision quickly.
What were some of the core learnings that you took out of that year?
My gosh,
then parlayed into
your
executive role?
So the first thing was, you know, I think I came from Lululemon thinking, I understand retail guest experience effortlessly. And what a massive learning curve it was to go from athletic wear to jewelry. It is so much more emotional. The guest doesn't care about quick tips on four-way stretch, sweat wicking. They're coming in to mark something special in their lives. And so, you know, they want more care. They want to understand, what is the intention behind the piece? What is the storytelling? Does it connect to them personally? So a very, very, very different perspective and psychology of the guest. That was a big difference for me. And that took some humbling. I needed to take some time. How do I adjust me and my approach with others when I'm bringing to life a story about why this product even exists? that was a big learning curve. Also, I think just the size of the organization. You know, it's a much smaller organization, and Lululemon grew so quickly and had such a matrix structure. That was a big difference for me as well, going over to Blue Boho. We have quite a flat structure. It's an open door policy. I receive feedback immediately. I'm able to pick up a phone and talk to anyone right away. So it's much scrappier. And that for me is a lot more fun.
A flat structure is becoming more common, but like still outside the norm.
Yeah.
Is there a learning curve as you're bringing new employees and new talent into the organization who maybe didn't come from a flat org prior in terms of them getting comfortable with giving and receiving feedback in that way?
Absolutely. You know, one of the first things I do is I meet with every single person we are interviewing, every single person, whether it's a store role or it's an office role. I want to meet you. I want to know who you are. I think we spend an extraordinarily a lot of time with people at work. And so you want to really enjoy your workplace. Mm-hmm. You want to enjoy the people you're spending all of this time with. So number one, I meet with everybody. The second thing I do is called a pecha kucha, or it's a version of a pecha kucha, which essentially is like five quick slides or pictures, something personal from your life where you get to story tell why this picture is important, why you've marked this moment, and then bring it to life to a stranger in a way that feels really personal. Because essentially, that's what you're doing on the floor, mm-hmm. is you're talking about yourself, your own life experiences, and how these pieces bring some of those moments to life. So that's one of the tricks, I guess, of really knowing who our team is and really investing in them, in their lives.
What's one thing that's in your pecha kucha?
My grandparents, Harry and Flo. I have a picture of them always in my pecha kucha because they taught me kindness and the true meaning of family.
That's beautiful. Do you have any advice for how to get good at giving and receiving feedback?
I do. I see it as a gift for sure. I think like growing up, I'm the youngest of five kids. I played sports, definitely needed to survive in a family of five kids. You know, and I grew up understanding the more feedback I got, the better that was. If my coach saw me, they were investing in me, giving me tips, acknowledging what was working, giving me some constructive criticism around things I could do better. I wanted that feedback. You know, for me, it was a temperature check of where am I at? How am I doing? Could I be better? Is there something I need to take the gas off of? Bring it to me, coach. Give it to me. I think of it still that way. The more mm-hmm. feedback I get from my team, the closer I feel they are to me, the more they trust me. Feedback is all about trust, and it's a gift. So I try to deliver it in that way where you do feel like, I see you. I see the contribution you're making, and who I'm being is somebody who's invested in you, in your greatness. And I hope that the rest of the team feels the same way coming to me, because it is an open door policy. You know, we're only as good as we feel comfortable giving feedback. So I spend a lot of time asking for it as well, going direct to people and asking, how are we doing? Do you have ideas? And sharing as much as I possibly can about strategies, products, things that are going to come so that I can get as much input from our whole team as possible.
Really letting people into the process.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like the more they know, the more skin in the game they have, they feel like, I made a decision on that. We chose that product because I said. And so I feel like it increases productivity. It makes people feel like I can actually impact what we're doing here and the bottom line. So I really do. I go out of my way to ask for it.
That's lovely. You are something of a retail whiz. You helped open all these stores at Lululemon. You've been expanding the retail footprint of Blue Boho. Take us into your decision-making process. Like, let's start with finding a location.
Yeah.
So important.
You know, I really do believe in being in that neighborhood. So if you have your eye on a place, spend time there. Go for coffee. Work there during the day. Meet people. Go into the shops. The better you understand your guest, what else is your guest looking for? What else would they shop for? Are there amenities close by that match your product? Is there an experience close by that would enhance your product? Really know your guest and spend time in that area. Spend time in that neighborhood. Get to know who the people are, key players, key brands, so that it makes sense to you. That's absolutely where I would start. And then I would just be obsessed with being the best at what you do. What is the journey you want your guests to experience? And does this neighborhood, does this space bring it to life? That's where I would start.
What is it that you think Blue Boho does so singularly?
Well, I think we're the number one sustainable fine jewelry company in Canada. And I think the thing that we do better than anybody else is explain why. Why did we make this piece? Why does this collection matter? What life moment does it mark? And why do you need it?
With a brand like Lululemon, it's like we probably have 20 pairs of leggings in our closets. You know, it's something that you're constantly buying more of. Fine jewelry, not so much the case necessarily. So how do you go about building customer retention and loyalty so that they're wanting to come back and back?
Make it as personal as possible. Know your name. Know what's on your wish list. Know who your friends are. Know what events of ours you attend, so that every time I speak to you, I can draw back on any of those things and bring something new to life in a way that's really relevant. Being guest obsessed, you know, I like to describe it as being guest centric. If there's anything that we are doing that doesn't impact the guest in a positive way, we shouldn't be doing it. It's a waste of time. If it brings value to the guest, I want to do it better than anybody else. I'm extremely competitive when it comes to being guest obsessed and making it as personal and intimate for each person as possible.
Are there things that you have tested that have not succeeded and you'd had to pivot?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'll share about events. I do believe that events help bring your brand to life. A, they show what you value. And B, there's an opportunity to bring product to life in a different way that people wouldn't necessarily have or experience unless you had this event. So something we've been working on is having a monthly full moon event.
I like it.
Yeah. It's, you know, always attached to kind of the cosmos and change. At Lululemon, we had Sunday morning yoga for years and years and years, like 15 years. Every store would shut down Sunday morning before open and we would host a yoga class. We started with like two or three people. There was nobody there. And for a while, you know, I even doubted, why are we doing this? But over time, we built a massive community of people that relied on us having a yoga class every single Sunday morning. It's something I'm really committed to at Blue Boho, too. I want to be able to bring our brand to life in a different way that you wouldn't necessarily experience. Well, it takes time to do that. You know, we first started doing different things at different stores during those full moon events, and it didn't work really well because we couldn't speak to all of those different events on the same day. So what we've done is we all have a sound bath every single full moon. There's a journaling experience. It speaks directly to our product and really brings to life the intention behind everything we build. And it's going to take time to grow it. So even when you have what maybe you think is a failure, if you're really committed to something, stick with it. Stay with it. If you believe in it, it will grow. You know, you have to give things time to grow.
I live in Venice, California, so you are very much speaking my language with the sound baths and intention setting and journaling exercises. It's beautiful.
Oh, good.
And I think we're in a moment right now where people are just like aching for community. I think when you are starting a business of your own or you're helping build somebody else's brand, I think there's such an art to assessing when to stick with your idea and when to pivot. Do you have any assessment strategies for that?
Like when to call it.
When to call it.
When to call it and move on.
And when to trust in your gut and stay the course.
Absolutely. Every single week we have a marketing meeting. And all we're doing is assessing numbers. We really are. We want to know what time of day works best to communicate. Is there a day that works best to communicate? Is there a way that works best to communicate? Is it social? Is it email marketing? And that's all analytics driven. It's all numbers. And, you know, there is a point where you can see, okay, this time, this day, this way of communicating, it isn't building or increasing our revenue. Time to abandon ship and look for the markers, the key indicators of what day, what time, what platform. I do feel like given the size of our organization, it's a strength because we can pivot very quickly and change the mode of communication. We can change the day. We aren't forever making decks, having them approved, going back, changing our approach back and forth with all the red tape. It's very easy for us as a small team to be able to say, okay, that didn't work. Great. Let's not spend too much time there. Let's learn what we can and move forward quickly. Maggie taught me a great lesson. When I first came on, she said, Nat, I try to be like 85% accurate. If I can be 85% accurate, 15% is learning. Great. I'm going to take the 15%, move forward quickly. I've adopted it. And I really try to think in that way because it's so effective and it's so freeing to feel like, okay, 15% error. Great. There's a lesson there. Let's take it and move on fast.
I think that's so important too for the perfectionists among us to give yourself a little bit of breathing room.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Take me inside the texture a little bit of when you're launching a campaign for a new collection.
Well, it's so tied to story, first of all. So way before we're even talking about a marketing campaign, we're talking about an amulet. What is the shape? What is the design? And why? Why are we making that? What meaning does it have? What lived experience is coming through this piece? So we're very connected to the story and intention of the product. To me, that's essential because why are we marketing anything if it doesn't have purpose and meaning?
Sure.
If it isn't a strong product with a very identifiable and accessible intention behind it, it's not going to resonate for anybody. So we really start there in bringing it to life. It totally depends on the time of year. If it's holiday, that's a very different marketing strategy and a very different guest. They're just gift giving. And if it's engagement rings, well, that's an entirely different demographic as well. So we would speak very deliberately to who that guest is for that specific product.
So you launch campaign and then talk to me about how you are measuring success from a metrics perspective and also how you measure success at Blue Boho from a non-metrics perspective.
Yeah. So in terms of metrics, ultimately revenue, I want to know what sales looks like and I want to know the channel that's driving that revenue. So I would say that's probably number one. And of course, all of the normal KPIs that retail would look at, like what sales per square foot in stores. What is AOV online? So I'm looking very specifically at different channels, have different key productivity indicators, but ultimately revenue at the end of the day tells me, okay, we made a product and we have a story that people can identify with. So I'll leave that there. In terms of holistically, what does success look like? I mean, ultimately, it's our people and our guests. I want to know how happy people are. I want to know how filled they feel. So I would say employee retention. If I can hold you for a long time, pour into you and see you promoted, move laterally, stay with the organization, I feel like that's a good, healthy indicator of where the brand is at. As well as our guests, I'm looking for Google reviews, referrals. The more there are, the better I feel like we're doing. To me, the most powerful form of marketing is if you leave the store or you leave an online experience, you're sitting down for lunch with your friend and you tell her, I had the best time. That to me is the most powerful form of marketing there is.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Still nothing that replaces it.
Still nothing replaces that.
That's a hard thing to measure though, because it exists outside of the world of metrics. So
it does, yeah.
How are you getting a sense of, you know, the conversations that are happening about Blue Boho?
You know, an easy way is through brides. If you buy an engagement ring from us and you have an extraordinary experience and you tell your friend, usually brides are in groups. You know, it's usually that stage of life. You're getting married and typically your friends are getting married or everybody starts getting pregnant around the same time. At least it was for me. You know, I could see, okay, I'm mid-30s. I'm the last of my friends getting married, but you know, you're usually like in that same age group and people are sort of following a life path. Mm-hmm. So typically with brides, if we sell an engagement ring and you bring two or three friends into the brand because you've had such a wonderful experience and you're so happy with your ring, that's a great healthy indicator on how we're doing.
What are you proudest of in your tenure at Blue Boho?
Oh, that's a nice question. The relationships I've built. I really truly mean I'm accessible to everybody. Part-time connectors that work in the store have my number and text me questions. Wow. Will you meet me for 15 minutes for a coffee? Absolutely. I think that's what I'm most proud of is that I'm accessible, I'm relatable, and people are honest with me. They trust me enough to really tell me how things are and what their experience is like. That to me is by far and away the best healthy indicator of how am I doing as a leader here. Do you feel connected to me and do you trust me ultimately?
That's really beautiful. And it also makes me think on the flip side, like if you have an open door policy, you have an open door policy.
It's true.
Like anybody can knock on it at any time. It's not office hours, which means that it can also breed overextension because invariably you have a bunch of other things on your plate. So
yes.
how do you approach time management?
Yeah, that's really real. And I spend a lot of time with store managers empowering them to make decisions. You know, to me, that's our baseline. Like that's the first place where people experience us typically is either in store or online. So our managers that run both of those channels, they need to feel empowered to be entrepreneurs themselves. And they need to know, I trust you to make a decision. I trust you to make the best decision for each guest. So really, I spend most of my time there making sure they feel empowered. They can be creative. They have a sandbox to play within. And outside of that, I trust you to make decisions.
You joined Blue Boho not at its inception.
Yeah.
Maggie, the founder, was what, about a decade in to the company?
15 years, yeah.
15 years in.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was it that she was bringing you in to do in that moment?
Lead her company. She spent 15 years growing that organization. I met her at Lululemon. There's actually two founders of Blue Boho, Maggie and Cheryl. And both of these women worked at Lululemon.
Wow.
I admired them. And I respected them. Cheryl was the best at guest experience. And she had a reputation across Lululemon for being like one of the nicest, most tender people. And she truly was. I think, you know, the inception of what Blue Boho's guest experience looks like really came from her. It was her tenderness, her kindness, her warmth. When you walked into a space, her store or a coffee shop, you bumped into her, she connected with you. Mm. And so that's still for me today. It permeates everything mm-hmm. about what we're doing. Maggie was an operational guru. She was so efficient. She was so productive. She moved quickly. We all kind of watched her in awe. Like, how do you do all of that? So the combination of the two of them had such an impact on me from the very beginning. I actually hosted one of their first ever kitchen parties where they said, Nat, will you host a party? We'll bring product. You bring friends. Let us introduce. So, of course, I gathered together a whole group of people and I had this amazing experience in my home, in my kitchen. So coming from Lululemon, I was already like deeply connected to the intimacy and how personal it was and the light touches of things and the intention behind it. So it was kind of an easy adopting mm-hmm. this way of being mm-hmm. in retail was mm-hmm. sort of an easy transition for me because I just fell in love with it from the very beginning.
I love how much you're speaking to the importance of really building connection human to human.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for our viewers out there, entrepreneurs and fledgling entrepreneurs, in terms of how to really cultivate that bond?
Yes, it's interesting. Well, because we're talking to strangers every single day, you know, and you're right. I am speaking mostly like a one-to-one model because I feel like that has had the most impact on me personally. But we also have a web manager who takes care of all of our guest experience. And she's talking to, I mean, it's 5,000 interactions in a year. It's a lot of people. You know, that takes time and balance, knowing how to take care of people at that sort of scale. So cultivating relationship really starts with centering them. It has nothing to do with you. Really and truly, every person is coming for a totally different reason. I've had conversations about people's IVF journeys virtually. I've had conversations about people receiving a new family member, a new arrival, or a passing of somebody, or a divorce. When you center the other person and you're really, really genuinely curious, and that's what you love to do, well, that's authentic. It comes through. People kind of know, like, okay, this isn't real. You don't care. And if you're connected to them and you really do genuinely care, they can sense that as well. And so we spend a lot of time on sort of defining, what does it mean to us to be guest-centric? What do we care about? What experiences do I want you to have when you're in my company? How do I want you to feel taken care of? And so we spend a lot of time talking about hosting people and our stores as hubs, our own homes. And that's how we take care of them.
It's so lovely to hear you speak to this, because I think being like a retail associate, for instance, can often be sort of pushed down in the pecking order of importance. But we've all had the experience of going to get a coffee and having a really beautiful interaction with the barista, or going into a store like Blue Boho, and it totally transforming your day. It's so beautiful to hear you speak to this, and not just the strategy at the high level, but the extent to which it really, it sounds like you're saying it really starts from the bottom and travels its way up as much as it's going from the top.
Absolutely.
From the top down. Okay, so I want you to give me a little bit of nitty gritty, because we're in this like beautiful, arty, philosophical space. But you went from Lululemon, which was like this, you know, became this massive company, to something that is much smaller in scale. Yeah. So can you speak to some of the wins from a marketing or brand loyalty standpoint at Blue Boho since you've been there?
I would say partnerships. I'll start with partnerships. Blue Boho has had a partnership with Birds Papaya, Rising Women, Jillian Harris, who was a former bachelorette, Jilly Box. We're currently working on a partnership right now with Happy Pops, which is a local female founder here from Toronto. She makes popsicles. Partnerships and collaborations have been essential. You want those relationships. All of those names that I just gave you, they're all female founders as well. They own their own brand. And so bringing that to life through jewelry and in gold, it's like alchemy. Feels amazing for everybody. It cultivates lifelong relationships. So I would say that's a huge marketing win, is the depth of those relationships and the pieces that have been brought to life, the stories that have been brought to life through those partnerships has been beautiful. I would also say, like, you know, having a mid-sized business, it's much easier to be scrappy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you asked me a question earlier about marketing tactics. Well, when you have a smaller team and you're more willing to, okay, that didn't work, it wasn't as successful as we thought, you can kind of abandon ship a lot faster, and you don't have to go through so many gates to prove why you want to move on and test something different. So that's a huge marketing win as well. And then I also think just like having more of a flat organization. If you need me to be there to capture content, to help out, I will, absolutely. You know, we're all hands on deck. And I think that is a huge marketing win as well. There isn't like, that's your laneway, stay in your laneway. This is on you. You need to do that. It's a team effort here. And it really truly feels like a team effort. We're all a part of one another's wins. So I would say that's part of our winning formula as well, marketing wise.
You are a mom of two.
I am.
Two teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And you have also been speaking so much to just like the human to human component of this, the care that you're pouring into your employees, the care that your employees are pouring into the customers. How much do you bring your personal life into your work world, and how much do you keep them separate?
Well, thank you for asking me that. Abby and Will. Abby is 15 and Will is almost 13 years old.
Wow.
I want them to know where I spend time, what I'm doing, the people I work with. They're the biggest part of my life. So I incorporate them in what I do, and I make it really transparent. Here's the office and this is the team. I'm one of those people that likes to look at the year and I'll plan the year out. So I kind of know, okay, this is what summer looks like. This is when we're taking vacation, so that I'm balancing it over 365 days. And I don't feel the pressure on a daily or weekly basis to try to like stack things in. They have their own lives. They're old enough now where they've like chosen their own sports. They have their own friend groups and they're busy kids. So I actually feel like I am trying to fit into their social calendar. I don't really feel the other way around. They're giving me permission, like, okay, mom, you can drive us here or drive us there. At a certain point, you become a bit of a taxi driver with teenagers. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they get to a place where they're like, okay, you're there, we're over here, we're good. So there's some like, you know, recalibrating, but I want to spend more time with you. Yeah, we're kind of in that phase right now.
Which then gives you more time and
energy.
If
anybody has advice, send it my way.
I wish I did. But then it gives you more time and energy to pour into the business.
Which I love, yes.
You talked about Chip saying no one's going to come and save you, which is like a sobering but very necessary lesson to learn. Are there other things from Lululemon that you and Maggie have brought into this operation?
Yeah, standard operating procedures. I want to preface this though by telling you, like, there were some serious life lessons from Chip Wilson. You know, he used to use death, like the end of his life. You know, if you're lucky, you have 50,000 days. That's it. What are you going to do with them? To hear that in your 20s is like, wow, whoa, mm-hmm. What am I going to do with my time? So just valuing my time, I really kind of like it was set there, you know, choose what you want to do. I'm going to take full responsibility for my life and spend my time doing things that fill my cup and make me happy and are closely tied to what I think is my purpose. But on a day-to-day basis, we really took the winning formula of having a standard operating procedure. And we do it in a slightly different way. We have a book of elements, and there are like 45 different elements. And we kind of highlight one every single day. And those could be things from be as guest-centric as possible, or approach everything with positivity and always assume good intent. So we bring them into our business. We talk about them daily. And then we create conversation around that. How are you bringing that into your work, into who you're being, into your guest experience today? So that's one thing we still do. We still follow that.
And how about some of the things that you have developed on your own outside of your experience of Lululemon? What is the Natalie stamp that you're putting on Blue Boho?
I feel like a pretty good sense of humor. April Fool's this year, we made a golden toilet with a diamond toilet flusher. And what did we say? We said, let that shit go. And it was a golden toilet charm. I feel like that sense of irreverence, lightness, silliness, you know, we don't need to take ourselves so seriously. Mm. I want to love what I'm doing and have fun and be silly sometimes. So that element, and I have to say, like, our designer and Maggie both too are full game for that. They are also light and have a good sense of humor. So that type of thing, and that can come through in lots of different ways, from a store event to a charm, an April Fool's joke. But I would say that that's Natalie.
Did you actually produce any of them?
No, but we would have if somebody wanted us to. We got lots of questions. Like, is this really real?
Oh, wow. Those are cute. I'm surprised that I'm sure people would buy those.
Let that shit go. I can be really hard on myself. Like, I can look back and think, gosh, I wish I had. If only I could. I can do that once in a while, too. But
spin.
Yeah, just think about it maybe too long and analyze it a little bit. When it comes to me, other people, I mean, if you and I have a feedback conversation, I think, hey, I see an opportunity for you. I mean, it's done, gone. I'll never really think about it again. For myself, entirely different. Very critical of myself. Mm. Something I think I'll always be working on.
You know, generally loud inner critic, loud outer critic. But it sounds as though you have figured out how to break that connection to some degree.
Well, I gave her a name.
Oh, what's her name?
Cindy.
Cindy?
Yeah, that's my inner critic. So when I'm doing that, I kind of know, okay, it's just Cindy. Let that shit go.
Wow. Does it work?
Usually, yeah. Like in the moment, it is just a reminder, like, yeah, I do this thing. You know, I go into this thing in my head and I start judging and criticizing myself. It's not really me. So yeah, it's usually a good check.
Okay, let's get granular. You have a huge amount of expertise in retail and brick and mortar. So talk me through opening that first location. What are the specifics that somebody should be keeping in mind and how do you navigate that?
Okay, the first thing I would do is decide, do you want to do this by yourself or do you have a partner? Doing things with a partner, I find a lot easier than doing it alone. So make that decision first and foremost. And if you don't have a partner, have a mentor. Build a community around you so that as you're looking at spaces, you have a good sounding board. And I truly mean, put a board together for yourself. Trusted friends, people in the industry, potentially people you've worked with in the past who you really respect. Bring a group of people around you that you can ask, you can bounce the ball off of. That's number one. Number two, spend time in that community. Know what else is happening. Typically, when you're looking at a space, I mean, it's pretty specific. You know the space you're looking at, but what else is going on in that community? Is there zoning things happening in that community? Is it about to change in 2 or 3 years? You really kind of want to know that community inside and out. And the third thing is be entrenched with your product. The better you know your product, the better you understand your guest, the better you'll feel at being able to make a decision around, is this brick and mortar space the right space for this product and this guest in this moment?
I would imagine that this varies to some degree from business to business, but do you have a sense of when you've moved into a brick and mortar space, like at what point you can assess whether it's working or not?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it should, like if you have been deliberate and slow enough, you should see traffic trickle in fairly steady from the beginning. Ways of testing this, do a pop-up. There potentially is somebody in the neighborhood that your product could complement. Mm. If you could take a small bit of space inside somebody's shop, partner with them, pop up for a short period of time and test that audience, you'll get a good idea of how it's received in that area.
How about things like negotiating a lease?
Yeah, that's a tough one. The first time I looked at brick and mortar, truthfully, I didn't know what I didn't know. So there were lots of questions I didn't even know to ask. If I could go back in time, if I could do it a little differently, that very first store that I was responsible for, and I had AI, I would have equipped myself with all of the questions I didn't even know to ask. So that's how I would use AI today, is to prompt it with all of those really niche micro questions. The better, more specific that prompt is to a space, the more information you'll get. So that's a great way to leverage AI today.
Well, you're sort of our brick and mortar AI in this context. So give me an example of a couple of those questions that people should be asking.
Oh, gosh. Well, are there zoning issues? Like, what does the future look like in that community? Is there anything happening in the city that would impact this neighborhood? That would be number one. Actually, I can give you a good example of that.
Yeah.
Lululemon years ago, I think it was definitely the year of the Olympics when they were in Vancouver. I was asked, should our Yorkville store be on Bloor Street or should it be on Cumberland? If you know Toronto and you know Yorkville really well, that's a huge difference being on Bloor Street beside Gucci and Louis Vuitton, or being on Cumberland, where I think Nespresso is there now, but there was nothing beside us really. Mm. And so I made the decision that we should stay on Bloor Street. Well, lo and behold, months later, all of Bloor Street closed down for construction. And it took about 4 years. Meanwhile, we had a landlord on Cumberland who was begging, who actually said, I'll pay for you to build the space out. Now, had I had AI at that time, I would have known that Bloor Street was about to shut down and go into a scaffolding mode for the next 4 years. I would never have chosen Bloor Street. I would have gone to Cumberland 20 times over, but I didn't have that tool at the time.
Are there ways that you're utilizing AI today?
Absolutely. I'll use it to check strategies. I'll use it to invent brand ideas. I'll use it to discover what trends, what's coming for jewelry in 2026. What are people looking for? What shifts, what changes have happened? So I use it all the time.
You have had the experience of building a really massive brand. Now you're building a mid-sized brand. You're coming into essentially somebody else's vision.
Yes.
Do you have any advice in terms of how to really understand and steward someone else's vision while also like bringing a little bit of your own creativity into it?
I stay as close to Maggie as I possibly can. And I go out of my way to like schedule appointments with her, coffee dates. And I want to be in store with her as much as possible. Mm. You know, I want to watch her bring her vision to life. I want to see how she is with guests. She'll oftentimes know people by first name, but she's always able to articulate the stories behind the products we've made in such a personal way. And so I feel so connected to her vision. Also having the great fortune of being able to host one of those very first Tupperware parties, I feel very connected to the feeling that she wants to create here. So that's super crystal clear for me. I also spent very intentionally that first year as a store manager so that I could be in the practice of that vision. I want to scale and grow. That's what I've done my whole entire life with my career. I started Lululemon at, you know, double-digit stores. We might have been around 10 or 15, somewhere around there. And when I left, we were over 500 stores in North America. That's massive growth in a very short period of time. But I really like the pace of doing that. I have such satisfaction every time a community is touched, every single door that opens, the satisfaction of seeing a team grow, come to life, and a community kind of rally around that store. So that's my vision. I want to open more stores and grow this organization for Maggie and bring more of these stories and experiences to communities.
How big do you want to get?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I would love to get to over 50 stores for sure in a fairly short period of time as well. I definitely don't want to stretch it over 20 years. I'd like to do it in a way more efficient way. I could tell you so many stories about Lululemon opening up stores. Oh my gosh, it was the journey we went through of opening up stores. Like as a store manager, you were a merchant. You were the person who hired everyone, the person who trained everybody, the person who set up the store, the person who spoke to the landlord. You did everything. I want to do it a little slower in terms of less scale, but very deliberately in a powerful way that brings the stories of the product through the experience one store at a time.
From a practical perspective for our viewers, what does that mean to approach it in a more, in a slower and more methodical fashion?
Lululemon, I worked with a real estate team. So I had somebody else doing that sort of due diligence around every community, every store. We don't have that here. We are the real estate team. So for somebody starting out, it's important to spend time in the communities you want to potentially, you want to open up a store. You want to know your product so well and know where it fits in. Is it complemented by other retailers around you? Is the muse, the person that you really want to speak to, are they in that neighborhood? The closer you can get to that guest, the better you will understand, okay, this is the right place for us to be. Be deliberate. Take your time. Don't be in a rush to open up a store because once you sign a lease, it is extremely difficult, if not sometimes impossible, to get out of a lease. Mm. So take your time and be deliberate and know who your guest is and choose very carefully the people that are around you because all of that will make a big impact.
This has been such a rich conversation and you speak so beautifully about not just marketing, but how it really connects to humanity. You've talked a lot about purpose. What's yours?
Mine is to create wealth with women for women. That's my purpose.
Hell yeah. Well, I'd say you are well on your way.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So much fun.
This was a really nice conversation.
Thanks for tuning in to Shopify Masters. Drop us a comment below with what you thought of today's episode and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a new interview. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.